All right, Stan, you're late. We'll make you say the prayer and the pledge. Wendy, are you ready? I'd like to welcome everyone to the City Council meeting, regular session, April 4th, 2023. We're missing two of our council members, Ted Knowlton and Lisa Van Langeveld. So I would like to excuse them. And if we get to where we need to break a tie, we'll let Ken do it since he's sitting up here now with the council. Awesome. First item is a thought of prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance by Councilmember Porter. Thank you, Stan. Next item is citizen comment. Dee, do you have any comments? Okay, thank you. Do we actually need to have a motion to table this next item?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, we're going to skip an item.
If you want me to, we were not quite ready for the police recognition tonight, and so it was my failure to communicate with Chief Black that we didn't quite get our officers and their families organized with enough time in advance. But we do want to have this item. Craig has issued a few written commendations for some fairly outstanding events, and we have some new police officers that we want to bring in, and so we'll plan that when everyone can attend. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Next item is consideration of a payment request from Staker Parsons for, they're going to use the old inflation excuse.
So this is a very unusual situation. So Staker Parsons came to me with a request. We went to Ken, we all met together, decided it was appropriate to bring the request to City Council. So in 2022, there were unprecedented crude oil barrel price increases. So the way that this typically works is the contractors know, they buy blocks of the binder oil, they know the total cost of asphalt in January. The price never fluctuates through the entire construction season. In this case, they had a situation where we had a bid early in the season to get a good price because contractors aren't already booked up. They had three cost increases to their purchase of asphalt. So obviously Staker's the provider, but the contract still has to buy it, you know, from the company. So what ends up happening is that cost increase created drastic changes in what it looked like. So UDOT always has the option in their contract. If the asphalt binder index increases more than 15%, UDOT pays more. That first 15% is absorbed by the contractor, and any changes above that are paid dollar for dollar by UDOT. So you can see the peak that happened in 2022. Most of years, it was fairly consistent. In 2022, we had this massive flux that peaked in August, right about the time we were paving Eagle Ridge Drive. So what happened in this case is Staker came back and said, we'd like you to consider paying this additional price. So we did a bunch of due diligence. They sent us a list of all of the contracts that had been done last summer that the parties agreed to pay an oil escalation charge, because this is not something we've ever done before. For example, Bountiful City had a project that they agreed to pay Staker 3/4 of the price that they had requested. They also did one for a number of public-private entities and one for Summit County. So I spoke with a bunch of people, looked at what the projects were, whether or not they were relevant, looked at our contracts, had Todd look at our contracts, and tried to come up with a recommendation that we thought was the most equitable. So Staker Parsons is a great contractor. They do a lot of work for us. We really value the relationship we have with them. And I can confidently say that this price they've brought to us was a true cost that they experienced. So the two projects that they did for us last summer that they've requested this escalation charge were the Eagle Ridge Drive overlay. It shows the bid price, the next low bid, the difference in those, and the amount that Staker's requested. The second project is the frontage road 75 East, 125 East. I think it's important to note that the Eagle Ridge Drive has a requested escalation of about 8.5%, and the one for frontage 75 East, 125 East is less than 1%. And the reason those prices are so different is that they're charging the binder index on the actual day the asphalt is installed, not an average, an overall, or a summer. So Staker has requested just under $42,000 in escalation charges. They've asked us to pay an additional $42,000 above their bid price. And while we do believe that this is a true cost of business, we also believe that a public bid is something that you don't be low bidder and then ask for more money. And so what we did instead is we compared that to the difference between Staker Parsons and the next low bidder. And in both cases, the next low bidder price has shown that difference. That's the difference between Staker and the next low bid. So then that became our not to exceed. So for the Eagle Ridge Drive project, although they requested nearly $40,000, the amount that we were able to recommend to City Council for payment is the difference in between their bid and the next low bid, less 50 cents. So inevitably, they're still a low bidder and not receiving more payment than would have been received by the next bidder. So we do have remaining funds in the Eagle Ridge Drive project. The project came in under our cost estimate and under our budget level, as did Frontage Road 75 East, 125 East. Some of that was based on the quality of work that Staker does and is able to stop and say, hey, we don't need to dig more of this out. We don't need to do extra excavation, which we always appreciate. So rather than recommending to City Council that we approve the entire amount requested by Staker, the staff recommendation is that we approve the dollar amount that does not exceed the next lower bidder for both projects.
Thank you. Any questions?
So we've already paid them the entire bid price, and this is in addition to that.
Correct.
Okay.
What do you think their sense, you know, when you talk about relationships and such, we're obviously looking at paying them less than what they're hoping to get.
Yes.
Will they appreciate this gesture, or are they offended?
No, and so actually I spoke with Jonas Staker yesterday. He's the overall manager for the project managers who work in this area, and he used to be my project manager who worked for North Salt Lake directly. And the discussion we had was that this was the proposal I was going to make and that I would not recommend to City Council the full amount because I doubted the ethicalness of that low bid swap, so to speak. And he said, of course, you know, that it was a real cost, and he'd be happy to send me all kinds of more supporting evidence, and he'd be happy to do anything he could. But he did very specifically state that he values the relationship with North Salt Lake, that it would, whatever happened, whatever City Council decided, there would be no impact to their desire to work for us in the future. And they would appreciate anything that could be accommodated.
Well, and we don't need to guarantee any contractor a profit.
Correct.
In that process.
Yeah, and it's in light of the fact that it was unforeseen. They have people that are estimators that are like amazing that they can come so close. So it was obviously something that was unforeseen. But we know that with now the what's happening in the Middle East, all of our projects are going to be more expensive because they're reducing the amount of production.
And there are significant effects that we do to try and minimize these cost risks to the contractor. Because that cost gets carried forward to us. If they don't know that uncertainty has to inflate their price so they can stay in business. For example, if we bid a waterline project, we tell them the date we'll give notice of award. If we open on Monday, have City Council on Tuesday, we get notice of award on Wednesday, they know the prices won't go up in those 2 days or unlikely to. If we open on Monday and award 2 weeks later, there may have been a 20% increase in the cost of fire hydrants in that 2 weeks. It has happened. So as much as possible, we try and help avoid these inflationary construction prices we've been seeing. You can't buy asphalt 4 months ahead.
I don't have a problem with it. I think it's a fair assessment that you did. I appreciate the way you did it. Because we don't want the next low bidder to say, wait a minute, this isn't fair to us. Right. And on the other hand, I can see where Staker got in a bind there, and it wasn't really their fault, but we don't want to, you know, like Mayor said, we don't have to guarantee anybody a profit.
Right. Any further questions? Motion?
I recommend approval of the payment request by Staker Parson for oil escalation costs in the reduced amount of $11,637.
I'll second that motion.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Natalie?
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Next item is a public hearing and consideration of resolution 2023-16R, resolution adopting the amendment to adjust the 2022-2023 fiscal budget, year budget. Heidi.
Thank you. So this budget, proposed budget amendment impacts three separate funds. Total use of fund balance across all funds is $160,900. In the general fund in the Economic Development Department, a requested increase of $9,900 for a grant match for the Town Center Market study that was done earlier this year. In the Governmental Buildings Department, an increase of $20,000 in contracted services directly related to the work that's needed to be done on the heating and air conditioning system here in the building. That's in addition to the boiler replacement that was approved, but just the call-outs that have happened. The next item, interdepartmental annual cap. This is related to the next agenda item, which is the purchase of police vehicles. The way that our internal service fund works is that a portion of vehicle purchases from Fund 61 is charged back to the departments. Because there is a request to increase that amount by $100,000 as part of this budget amendment, one-fifth of that, which is the depreciation portion, is charged back to the police department. So that is a cost to public safety of $20,000. And then an increase to salt and sand for snow removal of $20,000. Total impact to the general fund, use of fund balance of $69,900. In Fund 51, increase of $11,000 to rental equipment and vehicles. This is an advance. This is actually a request for the fiscal year 2024 budget. This equipment is needed for our construction crews who are doing a lot of the capital infrastructure projects when it's smaller projects. We have the opportunity to lease one at this point in time for this construction season rather than waiting till July and securing that piece of equipment. It is a cost of $11,000 a year for the next 3 years, or purchasing the equipment outright, I think it's about $80,000. So $11,000 impact to the water fund. And then last, and this is really the reason for the budget amendment, is this increased cost of public safety vehicles and equipment across the board. Both parts of the purchase have increased by 15%. The original amount that was budgeted specifically to public safety vehicles in the 2023 budget was about $250,000. The balance of the current budget, $342,517, that you see there is related to other equipment purchases, but this increase is specific to the five vehicles for public safety, an increase of $100,000. And then, of course, that $20,000 is the transfer coming in from public safety of those funds to pay off that portion of the increased cost for this year. Total impact to the fleet fund of $80,000. Were there any questions?
I have one, two actually. What is this piece of equipment called, the Mini X?
Mini excavator.
It's adorable.
I will let John speak to that.
We're small children.
Yeah, it's just a small excavator that we've rented one this past year to use on these water projects, and the rental on that has almost, it gets exceeded the amount of this lease. So
okay,
I want to say the monthly rent is about $1,300 to $1,500 a month.
Yeah.
And the excavator's the big scoopy one.
But it's a mini?
So yeah, it's small. It's one that they can take to the job site, and it doesn't have to be like digging up a whole yard.
Okay. You should have had a picture.
I should have had a picture, yeah. I can show you a picture later.
But okay. This was one of the items that kind of came to this amendment last minute because we recognized that we might not be able to get one July 1 if we don't secure it now, as we're having difficulty acquiring all types of equipment and vehicles, and so we figured it would be worth putting forth to City Council for consideration tonight.
Okay, that Bob the Builder moment was something I'll never forget. And then the other thing is, I noted when I read the cars, the trucks and cars, that there's packages on top of it of like $17,000. That's not included here in this number, is it?
It is.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
Okay. So a regular car, a truck, $52,000 or something, and then we add $17,000 onto that for police equipment. Okay.
And that's what we're finding. You'll see in the 2024 budget, the vehicles are about up from what we were seeing a couple years ago, about $45,000 to $65,000 fully equipped.
I have a question about HVAC. Do we think we're getting there?
Well, I believe they were here today. I don't.
Are you cold too, then?
I wish winter would end. because I don't think our HVAC system. First of all, our new boiler has been delivered, but it's not operational yet. And so we're still limping along, and it's cool in here. I would say this. I'm very hopeful that when the boiler is operational, tested, and when our software is completed so that we can control the system better, which comes as part of installing the boiler, that we will stop having so many service calls. Again, I'm hopeful that that's the case.
Ken?
I've always been hopeful.
Can I clarify very quickly?
Yes.
That this additional funding isn't to get us through the end of the year. This is what we've expended over
yes.
getting us to the point of the boiler replacement. So that yeah. it's this funding, unfortunately, was already expended out of this budget. So we're not anticipating any future costs once that boiler comes in. That's not what this money is for. It was just getting us to that point of trying to do repairs and recognizing it was a lost cause.
Thank you for that clarification, because that's absolutely the case. We just were under budget, underfunded in our HVAC service calls, and we went over budget.
It was certainly unanticipated when we budgeted at the beginning of the year.
You know, I have an office building that I've been replacing the controls on each floor at $20,000 a pop, and I'm getting ready to do two this spring, and they are now $50,000 a pop. And it's like...
They get in the air. They don't get air conditioning.
Yeah. Anyway, it's incredibly expensive and very frustrating in the sense that I know I'm going to make some people uncomfortable on these floors when I'm done.
Yeah. I would say this. I have confidence that we made the right decision, that the council helped and did your part in making that authorization of the boiler purchase. I believe that was the right thing to do, 100%. And I'm hopeful that when it's fully operational, we will have fewer calls.
Okay. Mayor, I did receive an email this morning from Thad stating that they would be starting up the new boiler either tomorrow or Thursday. They had to move a few things around in their schedule so that they could be here one of those 2 days, but that's their plan right now.
Okay. We can always have him arrested or something if we need to. Okay. So, yeah. All right. Any further questions? Let's open our public hearing.
Thank you.
Is there anyone here to speak to these budget adjustments? Well, we have to wait for it, so it's another minute before. Okay, seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing and entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion, Mayor. I move that the City Council approve Resolution 2023-16R, resolution adopting an amendment to the fiscal year 2022-2023 General Fund, Water Fund, and Fleet Fund budget.
I'll second that.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Lisa?
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Next item is consideration of vehicle purchases for the police department.
Well, Heidi's done the hard work on this already, so thank you for Heidi for explaining what needs to be done here. Just a little story. About 6 years ago, I bought a used Toyota Camry from one of our auto dealers here, and our used auto dealers, there's one or two in along Highway 89 there, and I bought one. And it got wrecked a few months ago. My daughter was driving it and was hit. And the settlement, that they totaled it, and the settlement was more than I paid for it 6 years ago, and it was still not a replaceable amount to even find a competitive vehicle. What cars are doing is just crazy, and I feel like they kind of have us over a barrel a little bit. We have to function. We're a society that relies on our transportation and everything else, but what I'm bringing to you is the authorization to purchase the vehicles that we had brought forward in this fiscal year's budget, and now that the budget's been adjusted to cover the increase in costs, we're asking to be able to purchase four new Police Explorer Interceptors. These are the hybrid models. Again, I still think that we are wise to buy these hybrids. They meet every purpose of municipal policing. They don't need to go 200 miles an hour on the freeway. They do get about 20% to 30% better gas mileage in the city than a regular vehicle does. But they are a little bit more expensive in the short run. But as Lisa mentioned earlier, Councilmember Baskin, the cost of gas just keeps flooring us a little bit. So I'm hoping over the next 5 to 6 years we more than realize the replacement cost of this. And then we are asking also to buy one Ford F-150 pickup truck. We will assign that vehicle to one of our traffic officers. They have to carry around these UDOT scales, which are huge scales to weigh trucks and things like that when they're doing the commercial vehicle inspections. What they have been doing is just keeping them here at the building, and when they have an inspection, they come back, they get them and haul them out. It really ties up the person and the trucker that they're stopping for a long period of time. This will just help them with their equipment a little bit better. As was mentioned by Councilmember Baskin, this purchase cost, the budget adjustment did include the additional cost to equip the vehicles. This purchase cost is just to purchase the four vehicles from this one vendor. We will be equipping these vehicles basically one at a time, and each one could be just a little bit different based on what equipment we may or may not be able to reuse. One of the, and I'll say that it's an advantage for us, is we keep our vehicles for 5 or 6 years. The sad part about that is the vehicle models change so much that we can't really reuse equipment. It doesn't fit in the vehicle anymore. A lot of cities and counties, they will get on these lease programs and they'll reuse equipment, but they're replacing their vehicles every couple of years. And so I think it just makes more sense to use these vehicles completely up and then buy the new equipment all at once. So if any of the individual equippings exceed that $25,000, which I don't anticipate they will, we'll certainly be bringing those back. But I think the way we're working with our Premier installation, and we're also getting bids from another company right now, we'll just work through the city manager's purchase authority to try to get those equipped.
Any questions? Do I have a motion?
I make a motion that we approve the vehicle purchase for the police department in the amount of $255,185.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you, Stan. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion, comment? Natalie?
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Thank you, Craig. Next item is consideration of resolution 2023-14R, a resolution approving the access agreement between the City of North Salt Lake and Eaglewood Development Phase 13. Karen?
Yes. So kind of some background on this. If you look at the photograph here, the white square on the right is parcel D in Eaglewood Cove 13. At this location, the developer has constructed two water tanks, one culinary and one secondary, as well as a chlorination building that will function in and that will work with that culinary water tank. So the parcel D has been deeded to the city. It belongs to us, along with the facilities that are under or that are built on top of that land. This is a view of that tank access road. So this is an easement that was included on the overall parcel or on the subdivision plat. But if you look at the two parcels, the lower one is marked 1310A, and then the darker gray is 1310HP, that's the hillside parcel. These two lots combined to be lot 1310. They were different property owners, so they were sold independently to a single buyer. 1310, the house will be in that 1310A section, and the hillside parcel has very restricted use, primarily recreational uses. It's private property owned by this homeowner. We have an easement for our road to get to the tank. So that's kind of the background. This is what that tank access road looks like from just above the tanks. You can see the terrain and the road that's been constructed there curving along the side of the mountain. This is actually the view from the bottom of the subdivision road. The little road at the top of the asphalt you can see is the tank access road beginning. So all of this road is located on private property owned by this property owner. So the intent of the agreement that we'd like to have City Council approve for signature is to kind of outline who can do what on that road and who's responsible. There will be a gate at the bottom. The road access will be provided. The gate can be used and the access road can be used by the private property owner, his or her guests, as well as by the city water department for access to that tank. This is kind of a description of what that property looks like. You can see these are the property lines tilted down onto a 3D view. You can see that the property behind the tank, and it's about 10 acres, this private property behind the tank, it goes down to a fairly flat area that resident should be able to use, but it'd be incredibly difficult to access in any other way. So if you see here on the side, a turnout has been provided. It's been built into the asphalt. It's very important that the private property owner not block this road at any time for any reason. But driving up and down, it won't hurt the city's ability to use it in any way. So the agreement has been written. It's been reviewed by the city attorney as well as by the developer's attorney. So the Eaglewood Cove 13 Development Group is currently the owner of this parcel. However, the lots are for sale. We anticipate it could be sold, and we would like to make sure that all of the rights and obligations of both parties are clearly defined before the developer is no longer the owner. Any questions?
But somewhere in there, there's the owner, successor owners, but then there's permittees who are allowed on this property.
So, for example, if you were the owner of this property and your kids came over and were going to go up and snowmobile on the land above, mm-hmm. and you said, yes, you can go snowmobile, those would be permittees.
But they're defined more broadly than that. I think there's a definition in the agreement that says a permittee is someone that's part of the...
1.2.
Oh.
1.2 of the agreement. Yeah, permittees, the parties acknowledge, let's see. Yeah, deemed permittees, those that are owners association for the Cove, phases 13, 14, and 15, shall be deemed permittees. How many people does that entail? I mean, well, how much access are we giving?
So we actually had a question at one point why the HOA had been included in here. And I can't remember what Wilford told me.
The HOA owns the storm sewer that runs up and down the street.
You're going to need to come up to the mic so it can be recorded.
I knew it was a good answer.
Wilfred Cannon, Eaglewood Development. The HOA owns the storm sewer that runs up and down that road to for emergency draining of the water tanks. They need access, the HOA, not every member of the HOA, but the HOA representatives need the authority to be able to get in and do any maintenance on that storm sewer line. So that's why it says the HOA is the HOA for all three subdivisions.
Right. It says Owners Association for the Cove. Over and then the three phases. There's no explanation in here for the storm drain. You have ongoing access to the easement for purposes of inspection, security, and emergency response. But I don't see anything about the storm drain. So, I mean, maybe we could just say the owner's association for this shall deem permittees for purposes of storm drain access.
We would not want to limit the association's use if they had any other reasons that they needed to get in there, but that's the storm drain is the primary reason. They're dealing with all of their people, but again, it's not the individuals, it's the association. And Todd, if you think we need to limit that, certainly we could do that, or specify that it's the officials of the association. Because yes, we don't particularly want, unless they're invited by the owner of the lot, we don't want every other person who lives there to be able to say, well, I'm part of the homeowners association, I can get in there.
Well, it has permittees, just says the owner's association. It doesn't say the chairs of the HOA or the elected officers of the HOA. It just says owner's association.
Okay.
That's not enough.
I have no objection to clarifying that.
Thank you. But, maybe before you sit down, Wilford, This is going to be a gated community, is that correct?
We are not. We are leaving it up to the Homeowners Association if they wish to put up gates. As we looked at the issues of gates and UPS and Federal Express and Amazon, we said we're not going to gate it when we get enough people up there that they can make a reasonable decision. They can put gates in if they wish.
I guess the city would need some kind of access agreement if gated. One of the worst kept secrets in North Salt Lake is the code into Montclair.
I never know.
So we would need a similar reciprocal agreement if they put gates up. Well, I'm sure we can arrange that.
All right.
So there will be a gate at the bottom of this road, and there's current discussion with Public Works on what kind of a automatic opener or gate they would like to have placed. But this will be a private road as part of the development, but a regular asphalt road that leads up to this access road.
And I believe it said that we're going to maintain the road. Is that correct?
Right. So the asphalt is there for access to the tank. The occasional use by the property owner is not going to contribute to wear on this road. And so the age of the asphalt and the weathering will be going up there potentially daily as it's a culinary water service location. And so what we've done is restricted it in such a way that rubber-tired vehicles, like a pickup truck or a car or a snowmobile, can go up the road to access that property for their use. But if they damage the road in any way, then they're responsible to fix it. And that we're not obligated to maintain the road to any particular level of repair. Like, the owner can't say, hey, we don't think the road's good enough. He can just use our road if he'd like, and he doesn't hurt it.
Or if we want to just use snowmobiles instead of plowing it.
I'm not going to lie. I think we should buy Public Works a snowmobile to get up there. It's quite the interesting drive in the wintertime.
Maybe a snowcat. Doesn't Morgan City or someone have a slightly used, damaged snowcat? Yeah.
I have a question for our city attorney. How would we rephrase that so that the permittees are more narrow in terms of the Homeowners Association?
Well, I think we could say EWC 13 Development LLC and the authorized officials of the Owners Association for Eaglewood Cove. And then I think we should further limit it by saying instead of ongoing access, access as needed to the easement area for purposes of inspection, security, and emergency response.
Including storm drain.
Yeah.
Inspection or access. Okay, let's specifically mention that. That would help, Mr. Godfrey. I think that will work.
Don't ask me to say it again, please.
That's what Wendy's for.
Any other questions? Lisa, if you've got that, make a motion.
Yeah, I don't know where the script is, but I make the motion to approve the agreement governing easement?
Resolution 2023-14.
Okay, I make the motion to approve resolution number 2023-14R, approving an agreement governing easement access and use between the City of North Salt Lake and EWC 13 Development LLC. In the agreement, it will be amended that the permittees shall be authorized officials of the Owner Association for Eaglewood Cove at subparagraph 1.2, and it will say that they can be used for providing access to the easement area for purposes of inspection, security, emergency response, and storm drain access, if needed. Is that all right?
We'll see if there's a second.
I'll second that motion.
Any further discussion? Let's start with Lisa.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Thank you, Wilford. How, Wilford, just a point of interest, how's the snow removal been this year up there? Is it a challenge?
One of the functions of my job is working with HOAs, and they're going to have to do a special assessment this year for snow removal because it's so much more than they budgeted for.
Since this is public comment on public record, I'm going to go on record to say winter is going to end tomorrow at 9 a.m. and we're through.
Thank you, King
Take
Arthur.
It to the bank.
The Wizard of Oz has spoken.
I don't believe you a lot, but I really don't believe you now.
Okay, next item is the consideration resolution 2023-17, our resolution authorizing an interlocal cooperation agreement between the City of North Salt Lake and Davis County for municipal election services. Wendy?
Guess I should turn on my mic if I'm taking one to Wilford. This item is coming before you tonight, just like it has many years in the past. This is nothing new, but Davis County provided the city with a contract and the associated costs to assist with our municipal primary and or general election in 2023. So I would just say that Davis County has the resources, personnel, and equipment for these elections, and their expertise is valued. This year's estimate that they've given is just an estimate, and it's approximately $17,000. And it's just a little bit more than it was, you know, a couple of years ago, so it wasn't a huge increase in cost. And we did add some additional area with the annexation area, so they told me they anticipated those costs. They knew that was happening. So, and it should be noted that if there was a primary election, this cost would be doubled. So that is per election, that $17,000. So I recommend the City Council approve resolution 2023-17-R or -17R, authorizing the execution of an interlocal agreement with Davis County for the 2023 municipal election services. Are there any questions?
I just have a comment. I think if we're going to approve this contract, we have to have a promise from the Davis County elections officers that they'll report to the state legislators that the election process is good and well, and there isn't corruption, and we don't need to amend it every session. Thank you.
I actually have gone up and reviewed their process, and I feel if every election in our country was done by Davis County, we would have good elections. Is there a motion?
I'll make a motion, Mayor. I move the City Council approve resolution 2023-17R authorizing the execution of an interlocal cooperative agreement with Davis County for the 2023 municipal election services.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Natalie?
Aye.
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 Thank you. Thank you, Wendy. Next item is, Karen. Let me read it. Consideration of Resolution 2023-18R, a resolution amending the city's comprehensive fee schedule, adjusting certain deposit requirements for geotechnical reviews.
So the city has existing ordinances in place that require geohazard investigations and reviews for a number of different kinds of properties. They're primarily identified on the Sensitive Lands Overlay Map, which I have up. These are for a number of different locations, also for any lots that are designated as restricted on the plats, for lots that have slopes greater than 30%, have an overall slope start to end of greater than 15%, or specific areas as identified by the city engineer. So currently, there is a requirement for a fee for a scoping meeting of $500, and then a deposit, which is fully refundable, in the amount of $5,000 for all geotech reviews. This dollar amount is refunded after the final payments have been made to our geotech consultants who do our reviews. Any amount that is not spent goes back to the person making the deposit. It's a straight pass-through. And any amount, if it goes down to a specific dollar amount, they are required to then make another deposit prior to any work continuing. The issue is that dollar amount seems reasonable for a subdivision or for a large development of townhomes, etc. But for a single family home, the dollar amount for that deposit seemed excessive. Based on recent reviews we've been going through the process, I anticipate that a full geotech review done by a well-qualified geotech consultant working for the owner should be somewhere in the range of $1,000 to $1,500. So we believe that this deposit amount will likely cover the geotech fees for a single-family home without requiring additional deposits. But any amount that we take is refunded after those payments have been passed through. We just would like to decrease the burden on a single-family homeowner to make that deposit and leave their money there for a while. So it's a fairly simple change. Do you have any questions?
Makes perfect sense.
That was kind of a motion. Yeah.
I move the City Council approve Resolution 2023-18R, amending the comprehensive fee schedule as presented.
Second.
Have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Lisa?
No further discussion. Aye.
Okay. Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. That passes. Next item is approval of City Council minutes for March 21, 2023. I don't believe I had any changes.
I reviewed the minutes. They were excellent. I don't have any changes.
Motion?
I wasn't here, so I don't know if it was true.
So I'll make the motion to approve the minutes of March 21st, 2023 for the work session and the City Hall meeting, council meeting.
I'll second that motion.
Motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Action items, any changes or additions or subtractions? Seeing none. Stan? No?
I guess there's just some out here that are really old. I'm just wondering if we're number 20 seemed a little from 216-21. Is that something we're working on?
Yes. Again
still?
It is. It's something that needs to be done. So
okay. I think that was my only comment as I looked through here that they just seem like...
It's a hard one. I can tell you that.
Okay. Yeah. We'll give you a break if it's a hard one.
Yep. Thanks.
I don't have any more.
Okay. Let's go to council reports. Natalie?
I have nothing to report.
Stan?
Let me think. I thought I had something, but I can't think of it right now. Move on to Lisa. Maybe Lisa? I'll think about it.
We're going to have the senior lunch bunch tomorrow. It's going to be pizza and the madrigals or whatever coming to sing.
Not tomorrow.
Next week. Next Wednesday, the second Wednesday of the month. And nothing else to report.
I guess I don't have anything. I can't remember what it was.
Okay. Mayor report. I guess I should comment that we've got a budget retreat week from Saturday.
On the 15th, yes, a week from Saturday. There's a little confusion, and maybe I'm the one confused, on what time we wanted to start. Do we want to start at 8 o'clock? Or?
I thought 9.
9?
But
everyone good with 9?
9 is great.
9 is better.
9 o'clock.
And are we meeting at Eaglewood or here?
We thought here.
Okay.
Oh, I thought we were going to do it. Not ready? The recording and the...
It's just too much to use that building the right way. Okay.
I just thought you were afraid of getting a rough house or something since it's so new.
Oh, well, no, I'm not worried about that.
It could be a bloodbath in there.
I hope you do rough house.
Jumping on couches and everything.
That's what we built it for, so we did the rough house.
I don't really have anything else. I'll let Ken report on a couple of things.
Yes. Okay. Related to the retreat, on the 18th, which is 2 weeks from tonight, David Franson and I will both be out of town the 3 days before the Utah League of Cities and Towns Conference is the Utah City Managers Conference in St. George, so we won't be here. And I have sort of manipulated things to not have much to do on the 18th.
Good.
Are you okay canceling the 18th?
Yeah.
I need to ask you.
Well, and Planning Commission's been canceled.
Yeah, so it is.
Probably for lack of items, I would guess. Yes,
so
she's shaking
like
her head.
Good time.
If we happen to have an item, we'll throw it on the budget retreat meeting on the 15th, and we'll just handle it there. Okay, a couple of minor things, and then we have a major one.
Good news, bad news.
No, it's not good news, bad news. And I probably won't use the, well, maybe I will.
Ken, can I stop you for a sec?
Yes.
Because I'm having an ADD moment here. Todd, I skipped you, and I apologize for that. Did you have anything?
Sorry, Todd.
I don't.
Okay. So now I can concentrate on Ken. Thank you.
We are glad that you're here, though, Todd. We are, even though you might not have something. We have had, I think I've informed the council of this, but maybe not. We've had a request from residents in the Views subdivision. So this is the portion of Eaglewood Village that's up the hill, mm-hmm. the single-family homes. They are, the residents who have reached out to us are highly frustrated with the private streets, the lack of snow removal, the poor management of the development group who is still the controlling entity in the HOA. And they would very much like to have the city take over their private streets, snow removal, and all the other services in their neighborhood. We, as a staff, have been working with them a little bit on this. We've given them all agreements, copies of all the agreements, articles of incorporation, CC&Rs, all those things, in an attempt to help them understand the current situation up there. I have also, they have requested a meeting with us and an elected official or two, if you're willing to meet. I would propose the last week of April. There's three property owners right now who we've been meeting with, very nice people. But before they go off and get a petition and raise all kinds of hopes and frustration for their other owners, I thought council feedback might be good for them. This is the position I have told them that we would take as a city staff, and that is that the city first would not be taking over their city streets, their private streets, or the obligations that they currently have. And second, and tied to that, is it's my belief that they should make a diligent effort to get control of their HOA, elect within the owners a group of managers who could be a board of their HOA, raise an HOA fee that's reasonable, mm-hmm. try to make enter into contracts like other HOAs do, and before we would consider, there are lots of reasons why we shouldn't take over those roads, but it seems very premature for them to not have gone through that exercise of forming, of really working hard to get their HOA up and running. I don't think they're at a failure point right now. They're at a frustration point, but not a failure point. But they very really want to meet with us and one or two of you.
Do you know how long their HOA will be under declarant control?
And I need to bring Todd in on this, and we haven't done that yet, or maybe we have. I don't know, Todd, if we've copied you or not, but I don't think we have. The CCNRs now say that the developer will remain the controlling party in the HOA until every lot is sold, and there's four or five lots left. Right.
Who's the developer?
Five lots.
There are five lots left, and they're the hardest lots to
they're
build on.
Very difficult lots to build on. So we need to do some work with that group. I don't know why or for what reason the development group would want to be in charge of the HOA. Everyone hates them. We don't hate them. All their owners hate them. They're only charging $40 a month. They're not providing services. It's really a mess. And so I'm not sure that we couldn't, with Todd's help, persuade that group to amend the CCNRs and let the owners take over and get themselves out of the
I would think they process. Would. They would love to
That's wash the their way hands I see it.
And, so, and move on. But did Ken, help my memory here. Were the roads built to city standards?
No, they're not in any way built to city standards.
All right.
So.
And what other services would the city be providing in addition to?
Long term, we would provide maintenance of those road surfaces, repair of curb and gutter. They have some landscaping that we would take over. They have a center median with landscaping in it. And snow removal. Snow removal is a significant challenge because if those roads had been built to city standards, we'd have a place to put the snow. But there's no sidewalks. Well, there's sidewalks on one side, but there's no park strips. It's really not.
How many homes are in the HOA?
140, 150, something like that. Might be more. Is it less than 100? More than 100, right? Yeah, it's less than 160. But I told.
So this is where I make my eagle with Eagle's Landing dig. All I have to do is elect the mayor from there, and then the city will take over.
We've talked about that. That's been a failure.
Did the city take over Eagle's Landing?
And it's a terrible situation.
I can volunteer to be on a group that talks with the residents.
Well, I was going to say, I could be on there, too, since I live in an HOA, maybe.
Well, I'm happy to have all three of you, sure. Okay, terrific. And again, they're nice people. I'm a member on my condo HOA board, and I said, look, this is the right way to do this. If you guys can get control of it, you can control your costs and who you contract with and everything. And Craig said he'd do it for a condo fee. So there's always a fallback, to use Chief Black. Okay, I thought I would report, the mayor and I would report on our meeting with the Woods Cross mayor and city manager on the 1100 North project. And I apologize for not just throwing this on an agenda. It's moving, and I just report on it in my report to you. But you might recall that that one of the concerns, by the way, this is a map of the preferred alternative. Here's the actual footprint of the project. This map was made by the city manager, which is why it looks so crummy. But you can see the yellow line. That's the footprint of the bridge. Does everyone know where we are? Main Street goes right through the middle. So our concern has always been if we expend political weight and capital here, and we energize the congressional delegation from Utah, and we energize Union Pacific, and we hire a lobbyist to use people like Ted Cruz and others to have this $60 or $70 million approved in a federal railroad application, it's critical that our city and Woods Cross City support the project, and we're not going to change our minds once we walk through that door of going after that application. So that's what we're trying to figure out. Woods Cross.
Ken, can I just inject one idea or two?
Please.
That I haven't thought of till now, but we really need the state of Utah to be on board 100%.
They will be, and I think that we have that side of it pretty covered because of the planning we've done. But that's something we should never forget. Woods Cross is talking about it tonight in their meeting. The mayor and I met yesterday with the manager and mayor and requested that they have a discussion with their council about how they feel about this project. We acknowledge that their higher priority is 500 South for their bridge project in Woods Cross, but we really want their support. The one thing that came out of that meeting was neither one of us know how the public feels about this project. And what I would propose to the council, and what I have started to put in motion, is getting a cost estimate from Horrocks Engineering on how much money it would cost for them to put together the engineering, the preliminary engineering and surveying of the footprint of this, that would get it to about a 15% concept plan, which would be sufficient for the Federal Railroad Administration application. And then that North Salt Lake and Woods Cross take that documentation, graphics, and plans, and we go hold some public outreach. We meet with all the property owners. We advertise open houses for the public, and we get some public input so that council members, both in our city and in Woods Cross, will know whether you want to proceed with this project or not. If the property owners are overwhelmingly opposed, that may have an impact in your minds as to whether or not you want to do the project. I think the public will be supportive generally, but we don't know, because we're really impacting Main Street. And Main Street may or may not have convenient access to 2600 South when we're done. And so there's those kinds of issues. So anyway, I've asked Horrocks Engineering to put a cost estimate together to do that, and I should have that next week. But if we go that route, we'd have some plans in about mid-July that we could take out to the public, hold some public meetings, get some gather public input, and then our application period is in November. That's the deadline for the application, for the FRA application. And then we would be able to know if Woods Cross and North Salt Lake would support this long-term and not really back out, you know, which we don't want to do. I know you don't want to do that, and we don't want Woods Cross to do that either.
I think I just have one question, Ken. Yeah. And maybe I was thinking actually of calling my nephew that lives in Montana and his son, and they do quite a bit of track engineering because they build things. They actually used to work here right at this plant years ago, but they do work with the railroad, and his son's an engineer for designing railroad things. But I'm just wondering, when you talk about that type of dollar amount, it would seem like we could move this one track over closer to the other track for a lot less money. And even if we moved it over, then moved it back, so it just cancel out the problem of building the long bridge. If that couldn't be an option B that we could investigate. I know the railroad's hard to work with, and they don't like doing anything that they have to do, but to me, it seems like it'd be less disruptive to some of the businesses if we could move the tracks rather than build this great big long bridge at the cost that it's going to cost.
We could certainly look at that. I think one of the problems with the Woods Cross Industrial Lead is that it serves numerous heavy industry, including the refineries in this refinery row area. So
right. I don't think we'd want to eliminate it. It'd just be shifting it to the east a little bit, and so it could fit
that,
under.
I mean, that moves it away, for example, from Ergon Asphalt, which has a spur.
But you'd still keep the spur there. Okay, so in other words, you could move the track farther down to the south and can move it over here, and then move it back over so it ties back in to service those to the north. Keep the spur there. It might change a little bit the way it looks, but keep it so they can get their cars in there. I just think it might be an option to look at it. The cost of what we're talking about, the bridge, yeah. We might be able to get property and build railroad tracks a lot cheaper.
Well, I'll get a response from Horrocks on that question. I don't know the answer.
Or maybe move it west.
Well, that's another possibility. I mean, if we could move the track at all, although the west is kind of going downhill, and I don't think trains like to go up and down very much, but I just looked at some of the things coming back, and I think it'd be less disruptive to some of the...
It right down Main Street? Is that what you're thinking?
No, I was thinking more alongside the other track. And then up here where, you know, you got some empty property or things, kind of swing it back over to where it meets up with the spur there. To me, it just seems like a cheaper alternative, although I know, again, it might not be.
I'm not quite certain what it is we're going to ask Horrocks to do, if there's any cost associated with it at this point.
So there's no cost for us to get a cost estimate.
Okay.
I've asked them for a cost estimate on what it would take to do a 15% level concept design that would produce a drawing we could take out to the public. It will also produce surveys along this corridor where we could go to individual property owners and say, if we build this bridge, we're going to take 20 feet of your frontage, and we're going to have to relocate your driveways, and we're going to have to do XYZ to your property.
Okay. Forgive my ignorance. I don't understand what that 15% phrase is.
So I'm sorry. So these projects are designed in increments.
Okay.
And usually it's a 10% increment, which is sort of what we call a concept plan. Then there's a 30% level, which is where we're at with this with the project today. This right here is a 30% design level. It's an excerpt out of the 30% design packet. And this was the project that was rejected by Union Pacific. And then there's a 90% design and a final design. So that these are just typical increments where we do designs and then we sort of stop and we evaluate and we ask questions and things. And so the FRA application requires about a 15% design. And so that's why the 15% is important. Yeah.
You probably told us that before.
No, I don't know that I have. That's a great question. No, thanks for asking. And that's, I think, Mayor, that's all I have.
Well, yeah, but then you got something to go to Congress.
Okay, thanks.
How soon do you want to go visit with Horrocks, not Brian, with the Horrocks Engineering? Or is this something we can talk about at the retreat?
I think that I will put it on an agenda, official agenda, for us to discuss the cost estimate. Uh-huh. And I hope to have that by the retreat. So maybe we could take 15 or 20 minutes at the retreat to talk further about it.
I'm just looking at the views of this from the air and seeing what spurs they have. They really don't have any spurs until they get up to this refinery, and the spur goes all the way up to the other location where the other tracks are anyway.
Yeah.
Almost could use that to go back down and then, continue on up this track. Anyway, I'm just looking at it.
Yeah, no, I think that's
a piece of land right there you could use to get that. Yeah.
Sure. No, that's a good question, Council Member. I'll make sure that we discuss that with
Horrocks. And I know too. It'd be hard to get the railroad to agree to that, but then that might be where the act of Congress comes in, is that, hey, if we're going to save $10 million by just moving the track and disrupt less people, I mean, I'm looking at this, I don't know how many people would have to really disrupt.
Well, another option is to start the main line on a gradual increase after Center Street and go up over 2600 and then come back down.
That sounds expensive.
But yeah. But
I'm just looking at what we got.
There's a lot of factors. We've got a possibly very valuable piece of land on the east side of that railroad track.
Yes.
That somebody would say a bridge there might be a taking, of my value. And so a lot of things to consider.
I do think it would be really helpful, and Woods Cross, the mayor and manager, mentioned this yesterday, it would be helpful to know what is the impact on individual property owners. They're concerned about their property owners, and we're concerned about our property owners. And right now, I don't know that we could tell anybody what that is, but it would be good to know that.
Thanks, Ken.
Yeah, thank you.
We do need to go into a closed session.
We do. Just a short one.
For the discussion of purchase, exchange, sale, or lease of real property. If somebody would like to make a motion.
I'll make a motion. We go into closed session for the purchase, the sale, exchange of real property.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Let's do roll call. Natalie?
Aye.
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 Thank you. We're in a closed session.
Can we stop and start?
Yeah. We have to kick D out of here first, too.